the World Endurance Championship on RadioLeMans.com.
Hello there, this is John Hindorf and another special programme here on RadioLeMans.com as we're looking forward to the World Endurance Championship for 2012. The FIA World Endurance Championship, or the WEC as you'll hear us calling it here on Radio Le Mans, is all about travelling the world and having long distance races with multiple drivers and multiple classes of racing. You may have already heard our prototype previews. If you haven't, they will be available for you to download, or just listening will come round eventually. And that leaves us then for this programme to look at the cars that are, well, I suppose most closely related to the cars that, if we aren't driving them every day, then certainly we would aspire to drive every day. The Grand Touring classes, GTE, GT Endurance as the ACO calls them now, and split up into GT Pro and GT Am, of which more in a moment. Once again, guiding us through the minefield that is this category is Graham Goodwin, the editor of DailySportsCar.com. Hello, Graham.
Evening, John. How are we?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. A small, relatively speaking, at 12 cars in this field, split between GT Pro and Am, but we've talked about this in the other classes. There is variety. There's variety of tyres. There's variety of car. There's variety of driver. And if you're only going to have a 30-car field for the World Endurance Championship, then having the better part of half of them as GT cars, or GTE cars, as we should call them now, of course, is actually not a bad way to go.
No, and I think, you know, it adds, I think, a couple of levels, doesn't it, here? One is, you know, both these classes, the GTE Pro and Am classes, are, generally speaking, very good races in their own right. But, of course, what it also adds is that factor of traffic for the faster guys in the LMP cars to actually have to negotiate. And that can work both in their favour and, of course, against them. You know, we spoke, John, in the LMP previews about the perils sometimes of traffic and the advantage you can take. You know, these guys are having very much a race of their own, and in the pro class in particular, there's some serious factory players there. So, you know, I think what we've got there, two factors to bear in mind. Anybody that misses out watching the GTE race is frankly missing out on possibly some of the best racing to be seen out at any of these World Endurance Championship rounds. But in addition to which, watch out for those cars as the quick guys come through, particularly if they're closely spaced, because what we've seen certainly in the area of the LMP Coupe is drama could be just around that corner.
Before we talk about who's there, I think we kind of have to talk about who isn't. And the big, as far as I can see, the big miss in this category as far as 2012 is concerned, well, there's two, but certainly let's start with BMW. No BMWs in the World Championship, and no BMWs therefore at Le Mans either.
Yeah, and that's a shame, because those cars were mercurially quick, weren't they, last year? It clearly does mark, it's another kind of level at which it marks the downgrading, if you like, of the GT programme on BMW Motorsport's agenda. I'm afraid suffered at sacrificed at the altar of DTM in much the same way as the Hankook GT program appears to have been so, but watch this space for perhaps some more news on that front.
Oh, really?
In coming weeks.
Good.
But certainly for the time being, I'm afraid BMW is a done deal as far as the World Endurance Championship and Le Mans is concerned. They do continue, of course, in the American Le Mans Series, and therefore in the first round here in a separate race. But in World Endurance Championship terms, sadly, we won't be seeing the BMW M3 GT2 compete across the full year, John.
We do have a Corvette, but we don't have factory Corvettes, and we'll start with the GTM category, the GTAM category, excuse me. And we might as well start then with that Labra competition Corvette C6 ZR1. It is a factory built car for Christophe Bourret, Pascal Gibon, and Jean-Philippe Belloc. Belloc, obviously, the lead driver there. But no works cars. And again, I just wonder, Graham, how much longer that the works Corvettes can stay out of this. They will be at Le Mans, of course, as a one-off entry.
Yeah, I think what we can see here, it's a two-car entry, of course. This is the Larbra competition team that that won the GTAM Championship of the ILMC last year. So they come back, in effect, as reigning champions.
Yeah.
They've doubled their effort across the full season. They were looking pre-season to actually get a GTE Pro car and a GTAM car. That's clearly not happened.
No.
They have, however, got number 7 in my list of the list of ex-Peugeot factory drivers on board for their number 50 car, because we've got Pedro Lamy joining the equally quick, if not quicker, Julien Canal in that number 50 car, and Patrick Bornhauser in there as in effect the AM driver aboard the 50 car. That's actually a pretty good squad.
Yes, it is.
Pedro certainly knows how to pedal a GT car very quickly. Canal did very well last year. It was strange though, John. I don't know about what you feel, but I felt the Larbra team, much as they've got probably the fastest car on a straight line in that class, and certainly the noisiest, they were a bit of a sleeper. It didn't really seem to kind of jump out at any point during the season. They scored consistently, but of course had that 1-2 finish with a one-off finisher Porsche at Le Mans, which really cemented the championship for them last year in the ILMC.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? And we should mention it as well, of course, in the GT AM category, then you do obviously have to have an amateur driver, or at least a non-professional driver. You can have two pros, or a pro and a semi-pro and an amateur. It's the bronze, silver, gold and platinum thing again that Nick Damon so beautifully has described for us, and if you haven't heard that yet, that's available as a download. Two, slightly complicated this year, and I don't understand why IMSA find it necessary to have their own driver categories on the same model but not quite the same. And I appreciate this is a WEC preview, but it just makes life more difficult when you're trying to explain it to people why in one championship a driver might be a gold, in another one he might be a silver, or he could be a silver or a bronze. I don't understand that at all. I understand the reason for the different drivers, and I applaud it, Grim. And, you know, we've talked about this in other programmes. There is a set down, as far as the ACO is concerned, for the FIA WEC, there is a set down set of regulations that state exactly the criteria under which each driver is given the colour, the precious metal, the class that he's in.
Yeah, I think, you know, I can understand why it is that we might be getting the ALMS trying to encourage new blood or existing blood to stay into their championship. But I agree with you, John. I mean, it's let's face it, sports car racing, in terms of its regulations and the way these things actually turn out, is not the most accessible. It's not the easiest thing to understand. And frankly, anything that makes it easier to understand has got to be a good thing. And I tend to agree with you that splitting kind of driver classifications, it may just be that that's a step too far. In some ways, let's wait and see how things actually pan out, but it was a surprise to me to see some of the differences we're seeing across there among some of the drivers. It's always the case, isn't it, when you've got any kind of regulatory system, and certainly one that's based on, it's not arbitrary, but a kind of a bit of a movable feast of rules, that such as you'll see in driver classification. You do get some oddities coming up, very quick guys being pretty lowly classified, and perhaps guys who've probably seen their fastest lap in the years gone by still being classified way up there. But you've got to have a rule book. And
yes.
I guess as long as actually what you've got is that rule book staying there in black and white, that the teams, and for that matter the fans, know what to expect, I don't think it's for me to criticise it.
The next entry that I want to look at is a return to world racing, if you like, for Porsche. And it's the next on the list, actually, down from the 50 car to the 55, for JWA Avila, Joel Camathias, Bill Binney, Le Mans P2 winner, or 675 as it would have been, and then in, I think, 07, Graham, correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, dear me, I'd have to go back and check, but it's been a while since we've seen Bill out and running, and it's great to see him back, very much a sportsman. I think it was, you know, Midweek Motorsport and Radio Le Mans that coined that phrase, the sportsman driver, and Bill Binney is certainly one of them. He's been involved down through the years in a couple of serious efforts at Le Mans in LMP2, with originally his older Lola run under the Intersport banner running very well. I think that car won as well, John, strangely enough, under the InSport banner. But then taking that Le Mans LMP2 title with the Zytec engined Lola some years ago, it's been away from the racetrack for some little while, but great to see him back. Paul Daniels stepping back, the owner of the car, of course, stepping back from this this effort for this race only. The team's press release explaining that the build of the car has taken a little longer than they'd hoped for. Paul doesn't feel he's had enough time to actually prepare. He's taken a step back. Joel Kamathias and Bill Binney step in. That means, sadly, no race at Sebring, at least for Alan Simonsen aboard that car. He was due to join Marcus Paltala and Paul for the season. But so that's a pretty convincing-looking squad as well.
Marcus Paltala, I've always thought, was a bit of an underrated driver, if truth be known. He's always been exactly what you want of a endurance driver. Very good, very in terms of his times, very consistent, and tends more often than not to bring the car back, which is all you can really ask for.
I qualify Marcus as Finnish driver, of course, but he's done an awful lot of his racing actually in Belgium, and then of course World GT1 with the Belgian Racing 4 GTs more recently. But he's no stranger at all to ACO Rules Racing. Has raced a number of times with JWA in Porsches of various vintages down through the years, and he's, you know, a thinking man, but quite aggressive in a kind of racer's way, and I like that. And I think he's going to be absolutely reveling in this opportunity that's been kind of handed to him with the JWA Vela effort. It's good news to have them here, a British entered Porsche for the first time in a wee while in ACO Rules Racing, and I think they'll show pretty well.
JWA have dabbled with a number of GT2, GTE cars down the years. This is James Watt Automotive, and what's the Avila part of it?
Well, the Avila part is a new addition, I think, to the stable there. It's this is Paul Daniels, I think, part of the deal. It's, I think, Cheshire-based race preparation company, a relatively new addition to his portfolio. And, of course, they're using that part of it, not only to actually help logistics and the technicals here, but also to promote that effort. And let's face it, that's what racing's all about.
If we're talking about Porsches, then we should also talk about Team Felbermayr. They have got a pro entry as well, which we'll talk about in a moment. But the Porsche 997 GT3 RSR, which is the weapon for this year, the number 88 car is the Felbermayr Proton entry. Christian Reid, well, we know all about him. Gianluca Roda, well, he's been around the block a few times as well. And Paolo Roberti is also gaining a bit of a reputation, both in various national European series and on the bigger stage as well. And one thing you'd say about Felbermayr, Graham, is they know how to get a car to the end. Should mention, the JWA car, by the way, is on Dunlop's, whereas the Felbermayr Porsche is on Michelin's. There is a bit of a tyre war here too.
Absolutely, which is always good news. We know that, don't we? It just pushes things forward, and the guys in yellow are certainly keen to get onto terms on a world stage with the guys in blue. So, I mean, the 88 car, that's another quality team with, I believe, new colour scheme looking likely for this year. Still blue, but a couple of different shades of blue, and the early shots I've seen of that car means it's going to be a pretty handsome beast. Gianluca Roda, the most successful Porsche privateer for the last 2 years, the issue of the Porsche Cup at the end of every racing season, and Roda very unusually has won it for the last two seasons. I'd have thought what we're going to see there is possibly not the quickest car of the lot, but with Paolo Roberti, who's, you know, again another one of those an unusual thing here, John, maybe unique, a thinking an aggressive Italian driver there, alongside Christian Reid, one of the team owners, of course, and Gianluca Roda. Much more kind of gentleman look to that team than others we're going to see and talk about in the class.
Yeah,
but my guess would be they could well end up being consistent point scorers.
So we've talked about Corvette, we've talked about Porsche. The other almost required constituent part of a GT battle, even in the GTE AM category, is of course Ferrari. and Tracy Krohn has teamed up with Nick Johnson and Michele Rugolo in a 4.58 Italia for the first time, much been obviously running the predecessor car from that. And I caught up with him just a wee while ago to ask him about the World Championship and his hopes for being in the FIA World Endurance Championship for 2012. I'm with Tracy Krohn of Krohn Racing. The Krohn green Ferrari that we've become used to seeing over the last few years is back. And, well, you tell me why. I was going to ask you this question straight away anyway. Why the World Championship?
There's several reasons. One, it's a series with a lot of GT action in it, which I really like. I really enjoy. Two, it's a bunch of different venues and tracks that we haven't been to before. My wife enjoys it. We enjoy traveling around, and so, you know, one of the things is that we get to see some places that maybe we wouldn't ordinarily see. But I think really it's competition, and the series is taking off. There's more and better car count now, and we're just real happy to be in it.
You're in the GTE amateur category. That gives people like yourselves who are very, very good drivers, but not full-time drivers, the opportunity to win some silverware as well. And not every series has that. So was that another part of the decision-making process, Tracy?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you want to race against your peers, clearly. But I also enjoy racing with Nick. Always, we've been together for many years. This is just another form that we can do that in. You want to pit yourself against. For me, at least, guys, that this isn't their primary source of income.
Yeah, very good point. Now, you're staying with Ferrari, as we mentioned. You've moved up to the 458. The rules say that the cars have got to be a year old, but I hear a whisper that this car's a brand new build. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not that the car has to be a year old itself. The car has to have been in production for more than a year, okay? Not the car itself. So that's the real difference.
And how are you finding it? Early running here at Sebring at the test. Is it a much different machine from the 430 that preceded it?
It is a much different machine. Yeah, I mean, it's clearly it's wider, and I actually had a little problem with that going into turn one because they've narrowed they've extended the wall and narrowed the racetrack there. So it's kind of getting used to how wide the car is, but also it's a longer wheelbase. The body works wider, the wheelbase isn't wider, but the wheelbase is longer. Mm-hmm. So that's a little different. That's actually, you know, we're starting to get used to it. I really enjoy being in the car. And also it has paddle shift. So instead of sequential, we're on paddle shift now. So,
dare I say, a little more comfortable even to drive?
Yeah, actually, it's certainly less laborious. Okay? I mean, you know, normally with the sequential, it takes about 50 pounds of force to move the gear shift. So, at the end of the race, you're clearly not going to be as worn out.
So you've got a busy season ahead, really. Le Mans in the middle of it, which you've had success at in the past as well. Do you set yourself goals at the early part of the season, or is that a dangerous thing to do?
You know, I don't think it's dangerous. I think if you don't set goals, you don't really have a clear vision of what you want to do. So no, we set goals. We came in second last year. I'll let you surmise what our goal is this year.
And nothing else will do.
Well, no, it's not that it won't do. It's just you set goals, and that is the goal.
Just coming back finally to the World Championship. It's been a while since we've had a proper World Championship. The ILMC, which you took part in last year, was a de facto World Championship. But what it didn't have were those two magic words, World Championship. Right. Does that make a difference?
I think it does. I mean, we're clearly going more places on the planet. I mean, we're going to China, we're going to Japan, we're going to the Middle East, we're going to Brazil, and we're in the States, and we're in Europe. So, yeah, I mean, that's several continents, right?
Several, yes. I didn't do well at arithmetic at school. And the chance at the end of the year to have a trophy on there and go to the FIA awards in Monaco or wherever they're going to be held in at the end of the season and be crowned a world champion, that is not something that everyone can see.
No, I mean, that would that'd be a real thrill, and that is the goal. I mean, we're here to to enjoy, but we're also here to finish and win this thing. That's the point.
Good luck, and we'll be cheering you on. Very much a fan favourite, this team and this car. Cheering you on at Sebring and right throughout the season, Tracy.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Tracy Crone talking to me earlier in the month. Actually, back in the last month, wasn't it, when they were testing out at Sebring. And interesting there, Graham, his answer to a slightly controversial question from me, saying I thought the cars had to be a year old, and that I don't think was the answer that either of us expected.
No, I think I don't think it's actually quite correct either, because I think the rule is that GTM cars have to be built to a previous year's spec, so it's perfectly okay to actually have a new build car, but they can't have any of the kind of the knobs and whistles that actually come with the current year's car. So you know.
So if there's been any upgrades in on the 458, you wouldn't be able to run them. Yeah.
Correct. I mean
that's what I understand too.
That seems to be kind of underlined by a conversation I had at the launch of a car we'll be talking about a little later, the Aston Martin Vantage, where what I've been told there is that GTM cars will get some reliability upgrades, which strikes me as being perfectly sensible, but will not get the performance upgrades, which again strikes me as being exactly within the spirit of actually what we're expecting. You don't want to see people investing the massive sums that you have to in these cars to make them run competitively, only to see, you know, an inherent reliability fault hobble that effort, whereas it's certainly quite right that you'd want to see a GTM car not perhaps performing at the ultimate performance level of a brand new specification car.
Tracy, you know, a lot of people sort of poke fun at businessmen who come and race, and Tracy Crone is an immensely successful businessman, hailing from Texas, as he does, with Nick Johnson and Michele Rugolo, as we mentioned. He has had success in the past. He may not be the quickest driver. No, strike that. With due respect to him, he's not the quickest driver. His reliability and his consistency has certainly come along some in the years that we've been watching him. And indeed, he has had success at Le Mans in this category. And you've got to say that his ideal of winning a world championship, albeit in the GTE AM category, is actually exactly why people like him want to go racing.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, let's not forget, Tracy's got some heritage now in sports car racing. I can remember first time I met Tracy, he was driving as a one-off at that stage, a Mike Pickup in PK Sport, his first race in this kind of these rules of racing, in the American Le Mans Series. I think it was Sebring, actually. I'm sure it was Sebring, way back when. From there, what happened was, the next thing we saw it was he was in a corporate adventure with Dick Barber, and you remember the late and not very lamented initial GT1 Lamborghinis, John. I think David Brabham drove one of those.
He did. I've still got the T-shirt. It's probably there worth more than the cars are now, actually.
Absolutely. And then through then into what's been a pretty long dalliance with Ferraris, initially with the team running alongside, Rizzi Competizione through the ALMS and at Le Mans as well, where they have finished on the podium, of course. I think, and this is, remember, before we had GTEM, that car finished on the podium.
That's a good point.
And now with their own team, and still sticking with the kind of now very familiar indeed Chrome Green. And one thing to look out for the people actually at Sebring and take a good close look at these cars in the paddock, which I know many of you do, is that's not vinyled, that's paint.
Yeah.
That car was painted, Michelotto, and darn fine, I gather it looks too. In that very green. But no, it's a classic amateur effort with and you know what, that's not using amateur in a derogatory sense. It's using amateur in the way that it's intended to be used in this context, and I frankly think it has a flag of honor like that. Some would disagree, I don't, and my view is I'm very glad indeed that Tracy and others like him continue to choose to spend a very large amount of money indeed, providing entertainment, providing part of this grid, and let's face it, providing employment for an awful lot of people in racing.
The question that I asked him about that amateur, being able to win the amateur to class, I do think that championships should take note of that, and we've seen it in the past in Europe, and indeed, you know, I don't often see eye to eye with Stefan Rattel and his organisation, but they've had sportsmen and private A classes in a variety of their of their championships in the past and had them sponsored as well, in fact. And well done them for that. I do think that national championships, like the British GT Championships, certainly like the ELMS, the IMSA Championships, they need to take notice of this, because the absolute bottom line of all of this is that if you don't have wealthy amateurs coming in thinking that they can win something, as Tracy eloquently said, racing with some against someone, okay, you've got two pros in there, but ultimately he's racing against the other amateur drivers in their cars, and that's what absolutely will make the difference.
And John, we said this, didn't we, particularly when we were talking about LMP2 in the earlier show, is where would this be? I mean, you know, let's not make any bones about it. The withdrawal of Porsche, of Peugeot from the World Endurance Championship could have been a death blow. And one of the reasons it's not been a death blow is because of the money that comes in from private sources, whether or not that's with a team in LMP1 like Rebellion, which is absolutely a privately funded team, or whether or not it's people like Tracy Crone, and Paul Daniels, and others we'll go on to talk about a little later.
Yeah.
The reality here is, I'm afraid, I think they need to feel a little bit more love in the room from the FIA and from the ACO. They should not be treated ever as if their custom is of right. I know that the long-held belief is that the Le Mans 24 Hours is as big a bigger draw as it is, and that they will always be oversubscribed. My guess is they were less oversubscribed this year than in previous years, and I hope that's been the wake-up call it needs to be, because actually the one thing you can say that we probably haven't said at the moment about the World Endurance Championship, that it is prestigious, it is long overdue, but it's expensive.
Yes.
And at the moment, there's fewer and fewer people with the opportunity and indeed the inclination to spend that kind of money without thinking about it very hard indeed.
Before we move on to the next Ferrari, I want to just go back to something we mentioned almost in passing earlier on. Crone Racing Ferrari running on Dunlop tyres, JWA Avila, the Porsche running on Dunlop tyres. How real a battle do we have, particularly in this GTE AM category, between Dunlop and Michelin? By the way, great to see Dunlop back and back in force in some of the prototypes, the P2 category particularly, as we mentioned in that show. How much of a real battle have we got here between Michelin and Dunlop?
Well, Dunlop want to win. I make no mistake about it. Dunlop, I think over the last few years, we've seen more and more effort coming from Dunlop. Michelin have been very much the established force over the last decade, but you and I, John, go to these kind of post-race press conferences and there's more and more guys in yellow caps at the front of that room, and they've been taking class wins, and they've been taking class wins in the big races too, and we've seen on the odd occasion an entire podium made up of guys in yellow caps.
Yes.
I think what you're seeing emerge at the moment is that Dunlop have got a strategy, as do very many of the tyre manufacturers, and their strategy at the moment is to pick up custom, because this is it's a commercial venture as well, of course. Mm-hmm. We've seen what they've done with the Dubai 24 Hours. They've made that their own,
yes,
literally their own. What we're seeing now, I think, is this, that they're exploiting opportunities as they arise. LMP2 is the classic example where they, I think, have actually got tyres on all the cars in the World Endurance Championship this year. And they've always taken, I think, a very sensible view of what they should be doing in GT, which is to get a good product out there and not overpromise and not actually put too many shoes on too many horses. What they're doing here, I think, is they're picking their targets wisely. They're looking for a variety of teams, a variety of chassis, and slowly they're making that kind of level of progress.
Still the most successful tyre brand at Le Mans, of course. Moving on to luxury racing, as a number of teams in the World Endurance Championship GTE category, they have a pro and an AM arm as far as their racing is concerned this year. Luxury Racing, the 58 car, is the AM, and it has the far from AM Pierre Herret, Dominic Farnbacher and Francois Jakubowski in there. Now that to me looks a decent lineup. Dominic Farnbacher, we've mentioned him already, following the demise of the Hankook GT program, thanks to their involvement, heavy involvement as a spec tyre in DTM. Dominic has had to pretty much wrap up his own racing. He's found a home at Luxury Racing with the 458 with Pierre Arret, and Francois Jakubowski has a couple of co-drivers there, Graham, who are not without experience.
Well, they can get it done. I mean, yeah, let's talk about Dominic first. I mean, Dominic is real world quick. You know, he's right up there, and you know, has been knocking on the door of you know, potential drives with, you know, the factory backed OEM cars. He certainly had you know, the Hankook contract in his pocket with the, you know, the effort we'd seen in the Le Mans series over the last couple of years, and it's a shame to see the back of that. Very great effort, I thought that was too. But it's good that he's found a home there. He raced for Luxury Racing in the final race of last season in China, in the ILMC, and did rather well there too. Continue to have some reservations about Luxury Racing. They do seem to be a team in search of a bit of rhythm.
What's the background for those who don't know? They're relative newcomers into the endurance racing world. They did have a bit of help from another team at times last year, that team being Ricci Competizione.
They did. We saw Giuseppe Ricci at the Spa 1000 Ks last year for the first time in many, many years at Spa, Giuseppe. And Ricci particularly were helping them out in their two-car efforts at Le Mans 24 Hours. Remains to be seen what the kind of technical package is going to be here. I can tell you that I know that the team were involved in discussions till a very late stage before the season with another team as a kind of technical and racing partner. That didn't come off, so they're doing their own thing again. And let's wait and see. Their background, well, they've dallied around in, I think there was a little bit of, in a previous kind of iteration, in one make Ferrari Racing,
yes.
International GT Open, I think a little bit of French GT, but it's a kind of family-owned team with clearly a pretty solid aspirations. Two GTE Pro cars last year, but that was principally because they'd chosen to go the Ferrari 458 route, and of course they couldn't run that car last year as an AM car. We'll wait and see what actually emerges from this effort this time. I hope they do well. You know, we can do with more teams putting together two car efforts. They are back with one in either class. I'd expect that car to show well. Pierre can be solid, if not the quickest man on the planet, but certainly makes relatively few mistakes. Mr. Jakubowski, we saw the odd mistake last year, but I think by the time we got towards the end of the season, things were coming on stronger. The key to this, John, is going to be consistency. And that means mechanical consistency as well as driver consistency. Let's wait and see.
I think we've got one more arm, haven't we?
Other than the second Labra car, which I think we sort of covered.
Yes.
It's probably the lesser of the two with Pascal Gibbon, Jean-Philippe Belloc, and Christophe Bourret. That's very much more an amateur-looking effort. Jean-Christophe is quite a quick guy, but that's a pretty classic Labra effort there. I think we could describe that as a more commercial effort from Jacques Leconte's team, and again, nothing wrong with that.
The final Ferrari in the amateur class is the 61, newly renamed AF Corsa Waltrip team. Rob Kaufman, the rather hard done by Rob Kaufman, who I'm delighted to say has not been put off by his frankly disgraceful treatment at Le Mans last year when Rocky had his accident around him. Absolutely not Rob's fault in any way, as far as I was concerned. Rui Aguash and the big man himself, Michael Waltrip. Now, I don't think you can underestimate how important having MW in that car, not just his name on the car, is. And with Rui Aguash, there's a guy who's, you know, been involved in this type of racing for some time. He's been involved with a number of different teams. Is that the strongest driver lineup that I can see in the amateur class? No, it's not, but it's certainly going to get a lot of column inches, and I actually think if they can keep the wheels under that car, they'll get some results.
Yeah, I think what you're looking at there is a team with the odd thing there is actually Michael Waltrip's driver classification. For a guy with very limited GT circuit experience, I think he's classified as a platinum.
He is classified as a platinum because he's won one of the big races, which he's won the Daytona 500, has he not?
And that, for me, is probably a weakness, I think, in that system, because that clearly does not reflect Michael's ability at this level in this style of racing. And I don't think he'd disagree with that. But what you do have in amongst that and that classification, and you know, I struggle, by the way, to disagree with you about Rob Kauffman's treatment at Le Mans last year.
We could have lost him and that team because of that. And I think he's been, I'll be honest with you, I've deliberately not spoken to him about the incident itself or his treatment, but I think he's been very grown up about it, and he's decided that he wants to come back and do it.
I think probably Rob, being the shrewd businessman that he is, understood that the images that were seen of the incident involving Mark Rockenfeller were shocking enough that's actually something should have seen to have been done, but it was the wrong thing. And you know, we've been over this before, John, but you know, I think there were lessons there to be learned by everybody.
Correct.
And you know, and that means the LMP guys, it means the teams that are running the LMPs, as well as actually the GT drivers. But I do grow tired that every time we get a major incident of that description, that it's inevitably the GT driver that has the finger pointed. I know you point as well to the yellow 458 incident at Silverstone regularly as being an excellent example of, you know, don't presume that it's in parentheses the amateur driver wandering offline, because on that occasion it most certainly wasn't, and a lot of people have presumed it was. But yeah, it's great to see them back. It's going to be greater still to actually see this team actually contest this championship. I'm hoping we're not going to get as much of a round robin of drivers as we did last year in that car, which I suspect probably had something like half a dozen guys in a bit of a kind of roundabout situation. But what that car does have in it is a man. There's another guy like Dominic Farnbacher that's been knocking on the door of factory deals, and if this car is delayed at any point, is one of the few guys in that class with the ability to play catch up, and that's Rui Agua.
Yeah, can't disagree with that. So those are the amateur class cars in GTE. You're listening to our preview of the FIA World Endurance Championship. It's Graham Goodwin and John Hindhoff going through the runners and riders of a small but perfectly formed field of Grand Touring cars. And whilst we've talked about Corvette and Ferrari and Porsche in the amateur class, we'll start our look at the pros with, well, effectively the new boys, or at least coming back to this category with an all new package. This is Aston Martin. The 97 car is the new Aston Martin Vantage V8, and this is, Graham, undoubtedly a proper works entry. I'm rather surprised only to see one of them, but I'm pleased that we do at least do have the one. We hear that they'll also run a couple of IMSA races in the States at, I think, at Laguna Seca and possibly at Long Beach as well. Stefan Mucha, Adrian Fernandez and Darren Turner, the familiar driver lineup for that Aston Martin Racing Vantage V8, we should mention. The new GT3 car is the V12. This is the venerable V8 engine machine, which has been given a bit of a tuck and a makeover, not only on its road car equivalent, but also on the race car as well.
Yeah, reasonably considerable updates to this car. First things first, though, John, the five GTOP Pro cars, all on Michelins, so
yes,
that's one
good
area
point.
We're not going to get variation. But no, reasonably considerable changes, certainly on the aero front. You'll notice some changes at the front of the car, new front splitter, I believe, higher wheel arches to accommodate larger rubber at the front. Probably most significantly of all in terms of the aero, though, the car is going to be allowed to run all season with the rear wing it ran at Le Mans last year, which I believe from Dan Sayer, the chief designer at AMR on the GT program, is the most significant issue in terms of straight line speed, and will be allowed to run at Le Mans without the gurney as well, which is again another gain for them. Second thing to actually say, though, about this car is that very many of the changes that have been made are actually to do with serviceability, and in particular the changes they've made, new front uprights as well, And actually new front subframes, which means that you'll be able to change the engine in that car within an hour, which was certainly not the case last season when some of the GTE AM cars had some problems. The teams were basically struggling to actually get the car to the grid on a couple of occasions. They've addressed
that. You had a problem in morning warm-up that required an engine change, you weren't going to make the start of the race, except for one, I think, superhuman effort by one of the teams.
That was Gulf Racing, Gulf Racing AMR at Spa.
At Spa,
lost an engine in the morning warm up, but hopefully that should be kind of in the past. The other thing I'll add to it, John, you're quite right. It is a single car full season entry. They have got a GTE AM car in the race, partnering with Young Driver on that entry for Le Mans 24 Hours, and we're promised that those two plus a third car, another GT Pro car, should run at Silverstone, and perhaps two cars too in China.
So
let's wait and see.
I think that's a good point that you make there, because whilst we have 30 full season entries for the WEC, for the World Endurance Championship, that doesn't preclude extra entries at various races, whether they be wildcard local entries or whether they be ACO compatible cars, ACO class compatible cars that just come in for the odd race or two. There's nothing to stop that happening. The ACO and the FIA have never said that that's the case. The reason that there's only 30 or thereabouts, as we've said previously, is because all of those 30 have to then have a race at Le Mans because it's part of the championship. If you had very many more than then that 30 number, there just wouldn't be any room in the pit lane for anything else at Le Mans. But I think at some races, Graham, that we will see, possibly, if everything comes together in the same places with the prototypes that we expect to come and do a couple of extra races and the GTs that we expect to come and do extra races, maybe somewhere like Spa prior to Le Mans, we could see the sharp end of 40 cars in the WEC.
Oh, I think that's right. And I think for several races, I think you're likely to see close to 35. Mm. I think, you know, they're certainly looking at what they can do to expand the reach. We're going to a lot of new markets this year for ACO Wheels Racing, or we're revisiting markets. And I think there's going to be a pretty substantial push to see what they can do to actually persuade some of those local teams to bring out cars, or indeed to persuade some of the kind of factory back teams to double or triple up.
Yes.
So let's wait and see. There are plenty of other cars racing in plenty of other series that might be persuaded to come out and have a bit of a play. And certainly there's a big push to see what might be done, I know, in China. And of course, there's a prospect of some GT2 cars in particular being available out in Japan.
Yes.
So we'll wait and see. We don't know yet exactly what's going to happen in the latter part of the season with the Toyota program. They've promised one car for the full season, two cars for Le Mans. Let's wait and see whether or not in LMP1 world that might change when it comes to Fuji, for instance.
Single Aston Martin then, as you mentioned, for the factory, AMR, Aston Martin Racing. Let me just see, a single Porsche in GTE Pro as well, but at least we have got one. We didn't have them in the ILMC, remember, in the Pro class. Team Felbermayr Proton with that car, running it as the joint with the AM car we mentioned earlier on, again on Michelins. And this has the quite formidable lineup of Lieb, Leitz and Patrick Pelier. Richard Leitz, Mark Lieb and Patrick Pelier, which... what do you say about a driver lineup like that and a team like Felbermayr?
Well, United Nations Europe there, isn't it? Three factory Porsche drivers, 2012 spec Porsche, and what a lovely looking car that is. It's got that real aggressive look to that kind of wider track rear, John. Mm-hmm. The livery suits it beautifully. I think that's going to be a fan favourite all year, and in particular, those three guys, one, they know how to pedal, two, they're going to want a bit of the Ferrari action here, aren't they?
They're
certainly keen to show that Porsche has lost nothing in terms of its competitiveness. And let's not forget either, John, there is something up for grabs for these guys, because what's going to be coming over the hill in a couple of years' time, it's an LMP program, and I can think of two guys on that roster that will certainly want to be part of that in the driving squad.
Yeah.
But we've got an Austrian, a German and a Frenchman in that car. Lots of pub jokes, I'm sure, but actually no joke on the track. They're going to be looking to take a few Ferrari scalps.
And also, quite seriously, Graham, in that there is a manufacturers' championship for GTE.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Now, what I'm not sure, I don't think it's the same, is it? That is it. One car can actually score points for the manufacturers' championship.
I would have to look deeper. We need a Nick Explains It All version of that, which we'll do before the first WEC round. The way points are scored for manufacturers and teams' championships are, to say the least, and I'm being diplomatic here, not the clearest.
They certainly changed it for LMP1 so that just one car can actually score points again to give an opportunity for Toyota to actually compete over a full season. You know, they've been persuaded in, but I have to double check to actually see where we are in terms of the GTE cars, because clearly with the numbers that are actually available to Ferrari, there's three Ferraris in GTE Pro. And six overall in the race, that would be advantage Ferrari. My yes. guess would be that it might well be the first scorer.
Well, let's talk about the Singleton Pro as far as the Ferraris are concerned. Although it's a single Pro entry, it is part of a two-car team, and that's back with Luxury Racing again. We mentioned their amateur entry. I do think two-car teams, even if you've got amateurs, have got an advantage, Graham, I'll be honest with you. There's just the amount of spares that you've got there, the amount of data that you are going to garner over a race weekend in what is quite a tight weekend in terms of track time. Luxury Racing's GTE Pro effort looks very, very good indeed. Jamie Mello, Reese refugee, I suppose, with the sad news that as it stands at the moment, Reese aren't doing any racing as we are recording this programme right now. They haven't got a programme sorted out. That may not stay the same throughout the season, but they are not going to Sebring, they are not going to Le Mans, and at the moment they haven't got a full season IMSA programme. Paired up or tripled up with Jamie Mello is the very impressive Fred Makovicki, who, if there were six races at a weekend and he could have a race in each of them, he would, and he'd probably do very well in them. And I think the interesting addition to that squad, Graham, is the third driver, Jean-Carl Vernet, who's an ex-Indy Lights champion, and of course, who is another one of the Peugeot drivers. He was their spare driver at Le Mans last year.
That's eight then. That's eight seats that could have gone elsewhere. That the world of professional race drivers must be cursing the Peugeot board. But yeah, that's a pretty compelling squad, isn't it? Jean-Carl Vernet, very highly rated indeed by some very clever people in sports car racing. We've not seen much of him, if anything at all, actually in GT racing, but my guess will be he'll get up to speed very quickly indeed. The now controversial Jamie Mello, I'm afraid, you know, dropped as a Ferrari factory driver, you know, after dropping the ball rather for Rizzi Competizione at Petit Le Mans, of course, crashing out on the warm-up lap. And Fred Makovicki, which I mean, we've said this before, John, but I think Fred Makovicki, or Fred Mako as he's known colloquially, is a star of now and a star very much into the future. This is a man you're going to be hearing an awful lot more of, I think, in the years to come, at least in GT racing, and my guess would be stepping up to LMPs before too very much longer.
The other two Ferraris in the battle here to make up the three in the Pro come from EF Corsa. Now, EF Corsa had more championships than anything else last year. I think they could have had 16 cars at Le Mans for all of the automatic entries that they won. Of course, they couldn't because you only allowed a couple of automatic entries. They have two entries into Pro. They're using the 458 Italia, which is rapidly proving itself as a very, very capable racing car as people get their heads around it after the first year. In the 51 car, well, Giancarlo Fisichella, Jimmy Bruni, Tony Villander, and in their second car, the 71 car, Andrea Bertolini, yeah, that's we expect, and a driver that we possibly didn't expect to see in there, Olivier Beretta.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the 51 squad. I mean, that really is, it's one of those kind of automotive chess games. All right, Feldmeier Proton, you're fielding Leitz and Pile. Well, that's what we're going to do to Knight to King 4, really, isn't it? Fisichella and Bruni were just, oh, you know, basically all powerful last year. Absolutely magnificent display from the team and from that duo. Giancarlo Fisichella, we've said it before, let's say it again, he's found his smile and he gets it. And he's enjoying this now. And I think, again, he's another man we'll see for some years to come in this form of racing. And it's delightful to actually see a driver of that quality, you know, actually realising there is pleasure to be gained at what for him is a lower level of racing. Mm. Well, Jimmy Bruni, well, I don't think he has to doff his cap to anybody in GT racing.
We've said it before, if you had to pick somebody to race for your life, he'd be on the list.
Absolutely right. You know, and I'll say again, John, gave me one of the best drivers of my life aboard nothing more glorious than a diesel Skoda Fabia around the Nordschleife a couple of years back, and huge respect for his ability at the wheel. And Tony Vallander, who, again, maybe not the best known of the Ferrari favoured drivers, but he was the man, let's not forget, that was actually chosen to mentor John Alesi and Giancarlo Fisichella when those guys actually stepped into the Ferrari GT program. That says an awful lot for his, not just his driving ability, but actually his capability of actually providing feedback. That is a mighty squad indeed aboard the 51 car. The 71 car, well, we wait and see who the third driver is going to be there. Beretta, of course, joined the Rizzi team at the Daytona 24 Hours in the GT3 Ferrari. And very much there is a guy now that is part of the Ferrari family now, after being dropped by Corvette at the end of the season last year. Andrea Bertolini, but we're actually probably more used to seeing Andrea linked in with the Maserati brand, and with Vita for one, but stepping up now to ACO Wheels Racing, I think, John, for the first time since we had that solo Maserati in the ALMS some years ago.
Which went off and did a bit of grass tracking and almost ended up in the river at Lime Rock, I seem to remember.
Absolutely.
At one stage. I have no doubt that Olivier Beretta will get up to speed quickly. I'm very interested to see who the TBA is. There's a couple of drivers who aren't in that category who I would have liked to have seen there. Mainly because I know them and I think they're good drivers, but certainly Rob Bell, of course, he's now gone off to be a Works McLaren driver on the GT3 program.
Is Rob not in the Paul Miller car? I think he is in the ALMS car.
He's in the ALMS. I would have liked to have seen him in the WEC, but as a factory driver for someone else, you're unlikely to see him
maybe next year, eh?
Yes. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, though, as far as we're talking about. That clearly the AF Corsa guys, and both of those, whoever the third driver is in that AF Corsa car, it's going to be somebody tasty. It's not going to be a rabbit. And frankly, even if it wasn't one of the best drivers with Beretta and Bertolini in that car, you'd still say that they had a good chance of the podium. Not massive entry in the pro category, with only a dozen or so in the GTE category in total. But I've got a feeling that that's going to provide us with some good racing. And on more than the odd occasion, I would hope to see, at least when the pro drivers are in, Graham, that some of the AM cars will get amongst the pro cars.
I've no doubt. I mean, if you look at some of the names we've been talking about, John, up and down that list, there's no doubt at all that particularly if you've got one of the pro guys starting an AM car, you're going to see those cars well and amongst them. You know, let's face it, these are amongst the number of the cars that would have been up the overall head of that race last year, and they won't have lost any of that pace at all. And you've got newer spec cars, and what comes with newer spec cars? Well, maybe a bit of speed, but maybe a little bit of development needed as well. So sometimes reliability can come and rear its ugly head. So let's wait and see what actually happens here. But with such small numbers in the GTE Pro category, it's not going to take much by way of incidents and accidents for a GTE AM car to actually score very well indeed in the overall rankings. But I think we've got a fascinating season, particularly fascinating start to the season coming, with, you know, obviously round one, a bigger GT field with the addition of the ALMS numbers, but then into Spa, which is a great GT racing circuit, of course, and then off to Le Mans, where these things just fly.
And I'm going to ask you for your predictions, GT AM. First of all, at the end of the season, who will be crowned the champion in the GTE amateur category?
I think that's a really, really, really tough one to call this year. The Labra guys just put together a very good program, and you have to say, with the Corvettes and with double points again at Le Mans, that's potentially, if they can run a reliable race, going to be a very big thing for them. I'd love to see the JWA Avila squad coming out here, but it may be a little bit early for them. Krone, they've found their feet. They've got a new machine underneath them. That one, I think, is going to be scoring very well as well, you know, in terms of consistent points scoring. For me, I go, it's one between three. It's the 88 Feld Mayer Proton Porsche. It's the Krone Racing Ferrari. It's the Labra Corvette. And of those three, I'm going this time to say the perhaps the 50 Corvette might make it two in a row for Labra in ACO Rules Racing and GTM.
I don't disagree with any of that. I want to see Rob Kaufman and Michael Waltrip. Actually, I don't think Michael Waltrip can do Le Mans, can he? He's got a clash. But I want to see Rob Kaufman get to the end of Le Mans. I think he deserves it. That's what I hope for this season for them. In the GTE Pro category, only five cars to choose from, but my goodness me, what a lineup of drivers there. They would grace any category of any racing anywhere in the world.
I think that's absolutely right, John, and that is a really tough one to call. I'm going for the moment to discount the AMR Vantage.
Ooh.
It's a new effort. I really hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong, because it's going to be a fan favourite. Sounds fantastic. It really does. But I'm going to discount that in terms of the overall order. I think they've got something to prove. The team are coming back and really up for this. Absolutely really up for this. And there are a few teams that know how to go racing as well in GT as the Aston Martin Racing Crew. But for the moment, with the quality of the field they've got around them, I'm going to take them out of the reckoning, which leaves you with one Porsche, three Ferraris. I'm going to take out two, the 71 car. Andrea Bertolini, Olivia Beretta, and whoever the third driver is might well be a quality squad, but I think they're always going to suffer from being the second car in that squad. I think certainly, whilst there might not be direct team orders, there might be some kind of favour offered to the 51 car there, which leaves you with AF Corsa, with Luxury Racing, and with Feldmeier Proton. The next one that's going to drop off that list for me.
Oh, come on!
It's the Luxury Racing car, and the Luxury Racing car simply because I think the team may be the weak link there, not the drivers. Which leaves me with the world's most difficult call. Is it AF Corsa? Is it Feldmeier Proton? Heart says Porsche's turn.
Ooh.
Head says AF Corsa will take it.
Graham Goodwin of DailySportsCar.com gives his predictions for the season. You can find out if he's right by listening to each and every single World Endurance Championship race here on RadioLeMond.com. What a season we've got in prospect. Hear it all, every single moment of it here. Join us for the first one at Sebring. Bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.RadioLeMond.com.